The Five Secrets of a Phenomenal Business, Chapter 3.
If you have staff, you're probably familiar with the story of somebody, everybody, and nobody. Somebody was asked to do something that was everybody's job. Everybody thought somebody was going to do it, but nobody did it. When nobody did it, everybody asked why somebody didn't do it. Somebody said it was everybody's job. Everybody said it was nobody's job. Therefore, nobody did it. Can you relate to that story? If you don't have staff, this chapter will reveal how not having staff is holding you back and what to do about it. The reason that systems are critical to your business is, number one, it's the key to profitable growth. Have you ever seen companies that grow big fast only to discover that more money is going out than is coming in? I have, and it's not very phenomenal. The bigger you get without systems, the more money is going out the door and reinventing every day. Second thing is employees perform better. When your employees don't have to depend on you to direct their every move because they have a system to work in, their performance increases. Next is fewer surprises. Have you noticed that human beings do weird things? The stuff that people come up with sometimes is mind-boggling. Like the time one of my clients had an employee who wrecked a company truck. Instead of calling the owner and letting him know, he hid the truck behind his house and didn't show up for work the next day. Of course, my client didn't have the systems in place back then. Now he does. Don't leave it to your employees to try to figure out the best thing to do. Have a system. Systems keep the owner in line. I don't know about you, but I like to change things up. I like to update them, try something new from time to time, tweak things. And as the owner, you might like to tinker. You might like to decide which part of the system you feel like using that day. And as the owner, you have to be the example and follow those procedures if you want your staff to follow them. Many years ago in my service business, I went out to do an on-site presentation for a prospective client. I assumed that the client wouldn't buy and didn't even write up a proposal. Instead, I just quoted a verbal price and left the project site. Sometime later, the prospect called to have the work done. My salesperson looked high and low for the paperwork and finally, in frustration, asked the prospect if she was absolutely sure that we had done the on-site consultation from our company. Oh, yes, she said. A man drove up in a Lexus, looked around, told me how much it would be, and then left. Of course, my sales agent knew exactly who she was talking about. Me, the owner, the one who decided not to follow the system that day. And, of course, there's another lesson there, too. Don't judge a prospect. Do the proposal. If you like to change things around and you have a team, they'll be confused if you don't inform them beforehand. Customers may also become confused. When you change something, be sure to communicate it and update the system. In fact, a consistent service experience is one of the other big benefits of having a system. When you have a system, the customer knows exactly what to expect. McDonald's is the quote-unquote poster child for systems because customers can get the same hamburger in Tokyo as they get in Paducah, Kentucky. Might not be the best hamburger in the world, but it's the same hamburger. It's consistent because they have a system. Systems take less of the owner's time. Ultimately, this is what systems is all about. The idea behind building systems is for you to have more time. If you're reinventing the wheel every day because there's no system in place for your team to follow, you're going to end up doing everything yourself. Ultimately, what you want to do is streamline your business so that you can have more time to pursue your life goals, to work on the business, to spend time with your family, to maybe take a vacation. In fact, as I wrote this section of this book back in 2012, I'd been traveling for almost 3 weeks. It was July 4th, and my wife and I were at our little beach condo in Florida. I mean, my staff knows what to do. They don't need me. We were in Australia for almost 2 weeks, and I didn't even have a phone with me. Finally, my wife asked me about 10 days into the trip. She said, "Have you talked to your office?" And I was like, "No." She says, "Don't you need to check in with them?" And I was like, "No. They know what to do. Remember, I have a turnkey business." "Oh, that's right," she said. One of my coaching clients built his business from almost nothing to over $2 million a year. He takes 14 vacation weeks each year and travels around the world. It can be done. Now, please understand that you don't want to be irresponsible. You still have a responsibility as the owner of that company. You still have to make sure that your directors and managers are leading properly and that things are being implemented properly. I liken it kind of to an investment property that's managed by someone else. You own the property and therefore have the responsibility, but you don't have to do the day-to-day management. Another caution is not to exit too soon. I have another client who didn't have the right team. He didn't have good systems in place. And because his business was very profitable, he just started traveling a lot. He began to travel continuously, and the more he was gone, the more things fell into disrepair. Finally, the question is, would you like to sell your business for a lot of money one of these days? What if one day you could sell your business and retire on the proceeds? How cool would that be? I've found that there are two responses, by the way, to this question. The first one is, no, I don't want to sell my business. I love what I do. The fact is that many times the work we do in our business is a ministry. It's our expression. We love what we do. Maybe we love the technical work, or we love marketing or sales. There's some part of the business that we work in that we really love. If that's your response, I want to say to you that you still need systems in your business. Here's why. What if you had to sell your business? What if you had to sell it? And surely you don't like doing every single part of your business. There are some things, some parts of it that you don't like to do and you shouldn't do because that's not your strength zone. That's not your gift. A friend of mine has a hereditary kidney condition that one of these days may take his life if he doesn't get another kidney. It took his brother's life. And as far as he knows, this sickness is inevitable. The problem is that his current business depends on him. He's a genius at what he does, but it isn't turnkey. So he's been feverishly building another company that'll help him reach his most important life goal, and that is to leave his family with the finances that they need to live comfortably should this condition take his life. Now, an update since 2012, he did get a kidney transplant, and he's doing great. You may not want to sell your business right now, but sooner or later, as they said about Elvis Presley, you will leave the building. We all do. Whoever takes over that business will need a system, and if you have to sell it for some reason, you can. The other response I get to that question, would you like to sell your business for a lot of money one of these days, is a resounding yes. Well, here's the bad news. First, your business isn't worth much if it depends on you. Second, an investor or someone who has the kind of money you'd probably want for your business doesn't want your 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job. They want a set of keys. They want a set of keys that they can take and turn the crank on that predictable, profitable, turnkey money machine that you've created. They want to be able to flip the ignition switch and have it run as good for them as it does for you. A friend of mine has a billionaire neighbor who owns a lot of companies, and this billionaire neighbor is only in that particular house about 5 weeks out of the year, and my friend collects his mail. So he asks him for business advice when he delivers his mail, and the business owner that's the billionaire said to him, build your business to sell it. Build your business to sell it, and then don't sell it, because then you have a predictable, profitable, turnkey money machine. Now, if you're a skeptic, you might think it's a fantasy to have a turnkey business that allows you to travel and do the things that you want to do. You might be the type of business owner who believes you have to be there controlling every aspect of the business, and that if you're off at the beach, that your employees won't take you seriously. I want to say this to you. I'm living proof that it's possible, and I've helped many other people do the same. It is possible. It won't be easy. In fact, building systems in your business will probably be the hardest thing you've ever done in your business. That's the bad news. The good news is that once you have a turnkey business, you'll have something that very few small business owners will ever have. Let me say this to the control freak. If you love running the thing every day and that fits your life goal, go for it. But if you think that's the only way, let me ask you this question. Is Warren Buffett on the floor of the call center at Geico? I don't think so. In order to accomplish this, another thing you're going to need is leadership. Phenomenal leadership is required to develop people who can run your company for you instead of you. I love this acronym on systems that sums it up very well. Save yourself time, energy, and money. System. Save yourself time, energy, and money. Here's my acronym for systems. It goes like this. Systematizing your strategies to execute management successfully. You see, everyone has strategies. You might not realize how many strategies you actually have, but you do. You have specific ways of doing things. You may have intentionally decided to answer your phone a certain way than another. That's a strategy. You may have figured a certain way to do your technical work. That's a strategy. You may have certain ways that you advertise that you thought about and planned out and do. That's a strategy. Now, a system is a group of working parts that are designed to work together. Then and only then can you really execute successfully. Then and only then can you really and truly manage that business. By the way, even if you're a solo operator or an independent professional who works alone, you need systems. There's a specific order of things that works best. Once you find the best procedures and timing, do it the same way each time, and your results are going to improve. Once you've tested a number of strategies and you find what works best, then duplicate those over and over and put them together with the five vital components of a system. If you understand and apply the five components of a system, you can systematize just about anything. Assembling these five components creates the ultimate system. I believe these five components will work for any type of business or organization. In fact, this book was actually written in 2012. I'm recording it in 2017. We've proven that that is the case. We've helped so many business owners get turnkey. All they did was follow what's in this book, and they got coaching from us. They got training from us, but they call this the manual for a small business. So here are the five components. The first one is your vision. You have to have a vision, and that vision includes your mission, what you do every day, your values, how you live, the standards of conduct at your company, and the purpose, which is why you do what you do. We call that MVP. So you need an MVP that makes up your vision. Of course, you need business goals as well. Second is the organizational chart, and I'll explain that in just a minute. Then you need policies and you need procedures, and I'll explain those in just a minute. And then you need what we call performance results descriptions, otherwise known as a job description. So let's talk about the first component, which is your vision, your MVP. Your company's mission is the unique experience that you're delivering every day. It's what you do every day to accomplish the vision. Your mission, by the way, is different from your vision. Your vision is where you're going. Your mission is how you get there. For our purpose of learning together, we'll define vision as being more about your goals, the destination, where you're going. Remember the GPS? Your mission is about what you do every day. This is about what your team does every day. For example, the mission of my service company is to provide the most outstanding service experience ever. The mission of Phenomenal Products, which is my training and coaching company, is to help small business owners stop being a slave to their business. Let me give you another example of a mission statement. Starbucks Coffee Company, of course, their mission is to inspire and nurture the human spirit, one person, one cup, and one neighborhood at a time. World-famous Pike Place Fish Market became world-famous by adopting the mission of treating everyone like they're world-famous. Notice that each of these statements is only one sentence, and it's easy to remember. An effective mission statement is not some long, boring paragraph in a frame on the wall that no one knows. The receptionist that's sitting 10 feet away from it, who sees it every day, couldn't even tell you what it says. The owner probably cooked it up in some business planning session with a consultant and quickly forgot about it after the conference. Until you simplify it and transfer it into the hearts of your team members and clients, it's not going to help you. Speaking of the heart and the reason that the mission is the first component of building systems in your business, a system without a heart is just like a lifeless body. If you think about the human body, as intricate as it is, without a heart pumping, there's no life. You can have the bones, you can have the flesh, and all the intricate systems, but without the blood flow, you have nothing. Some organizations are alive, but that's about all. The next step is to make your mission inspirational. Your mission needs to be unique, meaningful, and engaging so that your team members feel good about delivering it and your clients get an experience that makes them feel good. Whether you're a doctor or you sell a product online, what's the unique experience you want your clients, your members, or patients to feel? A mission isn't a slogan necessarily. It's what you actually deliver. But you do want to teach it to your clients so that they will know what experience they're going to get. This helps you attract the kind of clients that you want, and you'll learn more about that in the chapter on phenomenal marketing systems. For example, the mission of my service company, to provide the most outstanding service experience ever, means that we stand out from the crowd. Clients get a wow experience that makes them feel important. It makes them feel special. It makes them happy. Zappos created a phenomenal online business simply by making customers happy. That was their mission. We make you happy. Instead of providing a functional service, we offer an outstanding, engaging, meaningful service experience that leaves them with their jaws on the ground. Our goal is to leave them with the feeling that no one else cares like we do. No one has ever provided that level of service experience. The first thing a new hire learns at our service company is our mission. In fact, they learned it in the interview process, and they agree to help us provide it before we even hire them. We have a 5-page document on our mission that is the first part of the hiring manual. It covers what the most outstanding service experience ever means. It not only talks about being on time, doing a good job, doing those kinds of things that are below the minimum standard. It also teaches that success is only achieved when the client feels they have received the most outstanding service experience ever from any service provider in any industry. It doesn't matter if we did everything that we were quote-unquote supposed to do. We didn't accomplish the mission unless we can clearly see that they feel that we did. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company does a phenomenal job with this. They have a credo card that each one of their, quote-unquote, ladies and gentlemen carry. It has their credo, their motto, their three steps of service on it. You can read all about that in my good friend Joseph Michelli's book, The New Gold Standard. In my Inner Circle membership program, our mission is to provide the most phenomenal community experience ever. We found that when people feel like they belong to an organization that shares the same vision and values, they feel accepted, they feel appreciated, and they feel supported. When they feel accepted, appreciated, and supported, they're going to implement. The number one reason that small business owners don't grow is failure to implement. I call it FTI. We move them in our coaching program from being a slave to their business into a community of people who support them, encourage them, and hold them accountable so that they can implement and create that infrastructure and have significant business growth. Let me share with you the benefits of a clear, compelling mission. Number one, your mission reveals who your target market is. Does everyone want the most outstanding service experience ever? No. Some people want the lowest price. Does everyone feel like a slave to their business? No. Does everyone want the finest coffee in the world? No. If you try to be everything to everybody, you won't be anything to anybody. Again, you want to see the chapter on phenomenal marketing systems to understand how the mission affects your marketing. Number two, your mission dictates what kind of marketing you do. Does every kind of marketing attract the target market that wants the mission you want to deliver? The answer is no. Your mission engages your prospects and clients. Your mission makes it clear what you're actually providing, an experience, not just a functional product or service. Your mission helps your team make the right client decisions. And this is possibly the biggest reason for a one-sentence mission statement. Although your goal in building systems is to document every step that happens in your business, the fact is we live in the real world, and your team has got to be empowered to make decisions when the lines are gray. You cannot write down every single thing that happens every single day in your company. It's impossible. So how do your team members make that decision? With the mission in mind. Obviously, we can't deliver the mission without making a profit. And that's an important part of the vision, by the way. But the mission helps them make the right decision. Next, your mission determines what image you'll project. Your mission will determine how your materials look, what kind of dress code you have, what kind of facility you have, and many other decisions regarding the image of your company. For example, if my target market is corporate America, my image has to be corporate. If my target market is small business owners, it can be a little bit more down to earth because they want to see authenticity. Your mission helps you adopt the right customer service policies. One of the biggest disconnects in small business is when the mission doesn't match the message. If the message says you provide the most outstanding service experience ever, but you set policies that limit your team from actually delivering on that mission, you're hurting the brand. Your mission leads you to the right procedures and training processes. Your people can have hearts as big as Texas, but if they don't have the training and the systems to work with, they can't deliver on that mission even if they wanted to. Your mission tells you what kind of people you should hire or not. If your people aren't passionate about the mission, you're going nowhere fast. As Jim Collins says in Good to Great, get the right people on the bus and then figure out what seat to put them in. You'll learn more about that in the Phenomenal Leadership Systems chapter. Your mission is the focus of coaching and discipline. When team members miss the mark and you have to take them into a coaching session, the entire conversation is about the mission, the values, the purpose, the vision, if you will. This takes the conversation away from me versus you. It's all about the vision. It's all about the mission, the values, the purpose. This takes the negative emotion out of the equation. You hire to the mission, you coach to the mission, and you fire to the mission. Once you have a mission that you believe in, you can use it to make everyday decisions in your business. What kind of marketing should we do? What should our dress code look like? What kind of equipment should we use? In his phenomenal book, Onward, Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, shared that when Starbucks got off track, the espresso machines that were chosen to cut expenses actually killed part of the experience. You want to guess what it was? The aroma. You can be tempted to do things that keep you from accomplishing your mission because you're trying to save money or you're growing so fast that you lose sight of what got you there in the first place. And that's what happened to Starbucks. In the book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul, Howard Schultz shares how they regained their brand after losing their way. It's a powerful story about the importance of mission and brand. When you have a mission that is understood, you can check, quote-unquote, check every decision that is made. A clear mission helps you rally the troops. It gives you the context for coaching. When an employee doesn't follow procedure, you can simply tie the correct behavior back to the why behind the procedure, which is the mission and the purpose and the values. Instead of your employees thinking you're mad at them or you don't like them or whatever emotional issue they might have, they understand that it's about the vision, it's about the mission. They understand that the mission is the best for the client. Speaking of clients, be sure to communicate your mission to your prospects, your customers, your clients, your members, your patients, whoever it is as well. At our company, our UEP, which is a unique experience proposition, is our mission statement. That's what the client's buying, and that's what my team provides. What a thing of beauty. The mission is the very first component in building systems because we must know what it is that we're trying to accomplish each day. While you're getting all your procedures in place, your team needs to know what the mission is so they can make the right decision. You need your mission in place so that you can create the right procedures. As mentioned previously, you may have heard people use the words vision and mission interchangeably. The difference between vision and mission, by the way, in my mind's eye anyway, is this. Mission is what your business is trying to do each day. In other words, every time we pick up the phone, it communicates the most outstanding service experience ever, or it doesn't. Simple as that. Vision is what you want your business to look like. In other words, your vision is what you get when you reach your goals. We want to do X number of dollars in business, X number of clients, X number of dollars in profit. We want to have X number of team members, etc. Finally, your mission is supported by your values, or what Starbucks calls guiding principles. These values help us live out our mission each day. My company has 5 values that we live by, and we communicate those to our clients. If we live out those values, we accomplish the mission. Simple as that. To create your own mission statement, think about what you want your client to receive. What do you want them to feel? Put together a simple but meaningful sentence and then begin to communicate that to your team. Post it on your materials, post it on your walls, put it in every place that it can be visible to remind you, your staff, and your clients what it is, what experience you're actually offering. The second component of systems is the organizational chart. Owning your own business can be overwhelming because the number of quote-unquote hats you have to wear. Someone not only has to do the technical work of the business, but someone has to market, someone has to go on sales calls, someone has to do the bookkeeping, someone has to order supplies, someone has to fix the equipment, and the list goes on. If you're a larger company and you have people actually doing some of these things, you're most likely overwhelmed as you try to manage them and end up being involved in many things that you don't want to be involved in and probably shouldn't be. You're involved in too many areas because you haven't learned the skill of leadership and systems. How do you ever get past this? You need a vision. You need a roadmap, a clear picture of the business. And a great tool to create that picture is an organizational chart. Now, most organizational charts for any company looks like this. You have marketing, of course, as we talked about before. You have sales, you have operations, you have administration. Well, someone has to plan that business. Someone has to manage the work. Someone has to actually do the work. And there ends up being 12 important boxes just in doing the work and planning the work and managing the work. There's 12 important boxes. No wonder you're overwhelmed because you're probably in every single box. So how do you get organized? You begin by understanding the 12 vital functions of every business. Each one of these functions is vital to becoming phenomenally successful in your business. And if you want a turnkey business, all of them are absolutely critical. Does someone have to plan the business to be more successful? You bet. That's the role of the person I call the director. Does someone have to manage the business? Absolutely. Someone has to make sure that all the things that are supposed to happen actually get implemented. I call that person the manager. And of course, someone actually has to do the work of the business. The good news is that it doesn't always have to be you. And by the way, men, business owners, your wife is not the only one who can answer the phone and do the books. She needs a life too. Understanding the three levels of leadership, directing, managing, and implementing, gives you a picture of how to separate and organize the major functions. Then there are what I call the four pillars of a phenomenally successful business. Marketing, everything you do to attract prospects to your business. Sales, everything you do to convert prospects into paying customers. Operations, everything you do to service your client, member, patient, or guest. And administration, everything that you do to track the results. And of course, you've got the three levels of leadership, as I just mentioned. You're going to learn more about these areas in the next chapter of this book. Now, here's how you use the organizational chart. First of all, again, directing is casting the vision for the company. It's planning and leading the manager role. The director knows what the end result looks like. You're drawing the picture. You're planning it out. You see the vision. Number two, managing ensures that the wishes of the director are carried out. This involves training, supervising, reporting, and overseeing the resources. And doing, of course, is just implementing the work to be done. To grow effectively, what you want to do is begin replacing yourself in the doing area on the bottom row first. As a business owner, your time is worth way more than $15 an hour. When you begin to grow, replace yourself in those areas first. Start with the area that you are not good at. Stay in your strength zone. For example, if you're good at marketing but hate bookkeeping, the administration area is probably suffering. Get a clerk or a bookkeeper that can help in that area. Or maybe you don't like the technical work of the business, or that's the most overwhelming, the most time-consuming area for you. Put someone in place to do the basic parts of the operation so that you can focus on marketing, sales, and administration. When I started my first company out of the trunk of my car, my name was in every box, just like the organizational chart that's in my book and that we use. Of course, at that time, I didn't even know there were boxes. Eventually, I hired an operations assistant. Then I hired a couple of operations technicians. Then I hired people to answer the phone. I hired people to send out newsletters and marketing materials and to do data entry. I hired a bookkeeper, and I did the marketing outside sales myself. Later on, I merged with a couple of other small business owners and put one in charge of operations, the other in charge of administration. Then we hired more people to do the inside sales, the on-location sales, and eventually I hired someone to do the marketing with me and then for me. Finally, I was in only two boxes, marketing director and sales director. Now today, my business is turnkey. And I used to meet with my staff once a week when I wrote this book back in 2012. We worked on projects and everything. I didn't even have a job in the business back then other than the responsibility of owning the business. And today, I don't even go to our staff meetings. I haven't actually had a meeting in the company in over a year. Now, I do business planning with my directors. I mentor them. I meet with them. I have three directors, but they do a phenomenal job. Here it is, 2017. We're still hitting records every single year. It's awesome. It's phenomenal. It works. Once you fill the boxes where people are doing the work, then you can move to the manager level. In fact, it doesn't even have to be that clean. You might still be doing some of the work and still managing some of those areas yourself. You may still work in the business in some of the doing areas. For example, when I wrote this book and right now I'm recording this book, I'm doing the work in the business. When I write a book, when I present workshops, when I record a book or deliver a seminar or do coaching or consulting, I'm working in the business. But I have an operations manager, I have a marketing manager, I have a sales manager, and I have an administration manager. I do specific, specialized work in my business, in Phenomenal Products, but I have coaches. I have people who work in all these areas of the business so that I can invest most of my time in the director level planning the business, and that's so critical. Although I'm doing some work in the business, it's strategic work and that I actually enjoy doing, and work that reaps big rewards for our company. But if at any point I wanted to stop doing any part of what I do in the business, I can. And when you build your system, you can do the same thing. You can create something that can survive and, more importantly, thrive beyond you without you doing all the work in the business. Speaking of what you do, there are four roles that the business owner can fulfill in the business. I mentioned the wheel of life earlier in chapter one. There's a spoke called career on that wheel of life. You want to think about what role you want to fulfill in your small business. Don't worry about how right now. Just think about your life goals and what kind of work lifestyle you're really after. Remember that you want to design your business around your life goals, and there are four roles that you can choose to fulfill in your small business. The first one is what we call the technician. What we mean by technician is the one doing the technical work of the business. In a service business, for example, the technician role is obvious. But even if you run a retail store or you're an independent professional, the doing of the work is who I'm talking about, the person who's making the sales call, the person who's processing paperwork, the person who is doing the website, the person who is doing the marketing. It's the doing of the work. Is there anything wrong with being the technician in your business? Is there anything wrong with you doing the technical work as a business owner? Is there anything wrong with you doing all of the technical work in your business? Absolutely not. If that's what you truly love to do, if that's what you're called to do, and if you can balance your life, it might be a wonderful thing for you. The thing is I've never found anyone who is good at all five areas of business, leadership, marketing, sales, operations, administration. I've never met anybody who's great in all those areas. You've got to stay in your strength zone. But what you might want to do is do what doctors do. You've been to the doctor's office, right? So you put in place an administrative staff and assistants so that you can grow your practice. You'll have other people that are doing everything except for the highly technical work. All of the concepts in this chapter will assist you, even if you want to continue doing the technical work, but you must organize all the other aspects of the business so that you're not so overwhelmed trying to deal with those. I want you to be the technician only because you want to be, not because you feel you have to be. The second role that the business owner can fulfill is what I call the customer service manager. This level is when you have others doing the majority of the technical work, but you're still managing the service experience that your clients or patients or members or guests have. A good example of this is an in-home service company. Let's say that you're a plumber, and you're normally the one who does all the work. Once you develop a system, even an ordinary plumber can get extraordinary results by simply using the system that you've developed. You're still controlling, quote-unquote, the client experience by directing the action. You talk to the client over the phone. Maybe sometimes you stop in to check on the job's progress. You're the customer service manager. Number three, the third role that you could fulfill is what I call the general manager. At this level, you have a team that does most of the day-to-day duties. They do the marketing, they do the sales, they do the service and accounting, but you're there to direct the operation. Sure, you can take a vacation, you can leave someone in charge, but you pretty much call the day-to-day shots. Again, nothing wrong with that. But if you want to go to the ultimate level and you want to have a turnkey business, the fourth role is the turnkey business owner. This is a level that I think that many, if not all, business owners truly dream of, but sadly, few ever reach. At this level, you have management in place that calls all the day-to-day shots. You can do what you want to do. You can do it when you want to do it. If you want to go away for the summer, you can. Some people believe that this is a fantasy. Of course, I'm living proof that this can be done, and I've helped many others do the same thing. But let's look at some examples that you might be able to relate to. Let's look at Walmart and Sam's Club. When Sam Walton was alive, could he be in every store? No. He loved to be involved where he could, but it was impossible for him to be involved in everything that happened at Sam's and Walmart. But Howard, that's a huge company. What does that have to do with me as a small business owner, you might ask? Well, here's what it has to do with you. At one time, Sam Walton had one store. What about Warren Buffett? Does he answer the phone at Geico, as I shared earlier? Does he write insurance? No. Does he work at on the floor at the Omaha-based furniture store that he owns? Of course not. So the point here is that you have to start somewhere. As Zig Ziglar once said, you don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great. And the place you want to start is getting your business systematized and organized so it's more predictable. You want to begin the process of replacing yourself in the areas you aren't good at and that you're not supposed to be doing. The third component of building systems is policies. These are the guidelines. These are the rules and regulations. These are the rules of the game, if you will. Policies are to clarify expectations on conduct issues, dress code, etc. A good example of a set of policies is what would be found in an employee handbook. By the way, be sure that your policies, again, complement your mission rather than competing with it. For example, if your mission is to provide the most outstanding service experience ever, don't make policies that are going to frustrate your clients. You can get an employee handbook, by the way, for your state. You can get a template and make any needed changes that you need to make to it and have a labor attorney review it. You don't have to create this stuff by yourself. You can hire people to do that. The technical policies for your industry might be found through industry associations or trainers or someone like that. This is a shortcut that we use. We'll get the permission from an industry instructor that teaches courses and they have manuals, and we say, hey, can we just use this as our system in our business? Otherwise, you'll have to write each one of them line by line. Even if you're getting something that's already complete, chances are you're going to have to invest some time tweaking it. The fourth component of a system is procedures, and a procedure is the how-to. It's the step-by-step, and you want to make all of your procedures step-by-step. If it's a computer program, for example, include every keystroke, within reason, of course. You can't cover every possibility, but if this happens, then do that. If you get stuck on this, then you do that. The nice thing about technology today is many times there's YouTube videos or online guidelines and things like that. If your industry has a technical training manual to use, then as I mentioned, you can cut down the development time and you can create your procedures from that. We have one department of my service company, as a matter of fact, where the technical manual was developed in our industry, and we used that in that to run that whole department. So whatever the book says, that's how we do it. The idea is that someone who has never done the work can follow the procedure and do it without any further instructions. That's what procedures are all about. This reminds me of when I first started traveling for Phenomenal Products to present workshops. My brother was traveling with me because he had an accounting business that required only a few months of his time, and he's basically off the rest of the year. So we're on the airplane, and he's sitting in the row behind me. I simply handed him the timeline and procedure for the one-day workshop that we were doing the next day over the back of the seat, and he read it on the airplane. The next morning when I stopped the workshop for a break, I couldn't find my brother. The rental car was gone, and so was he. Where could he have possibly gone? I thought to myself. A few minutes later, he comes walking in with a Starbucks coffee in his hand. I'm like, you're kidding. I'm thinking to myself, here we are on a break. I need help with orders. And he's at Starbucks. Why'd you go to Starbucks? I asked him. He said, because the procedure said to go get you a coffee from Starbucks during the break and to be back by 10:30. Two sugars, right? I'd taken the break a little too early that day. He followed the procedure. I didn't. Even though this is kind of a funny story, it proves how you can write a procedure, hand it off, and not worry about it. And it just works if someone will just simply follow it. The fifth component is what we call PRDs, or performance results descriptions. Once you've determined what positions you're going to fulfill in your business, get those from your org chart, you're going to need to fill in the other boxes. And these performance results descriptions, or job descriptions, as some people call them, describe and outline each of the roles, the responsibilities, the duties, the results that are required for that position. Many job description examples are long and cumbersome. A simple way to do this is simply to create a line item for each position. Each of the items will be connected to a policy or procedure. Each of these line items could also be called what we call a KRA, or a key result area. A KRA spells out the results that are expected for each key area. For example, a bookkeeper position description would have a KRA called accounts payable. It might be read as follows. Key result area, accounts payable. My job in this area will have been successfully completed when I have, entered all payables according to our company accounts payable policies and procedures. So you see that we can just put accounts payable on there, and then we can develop policies and procedures of how we do it, why we do it, and what the standards are, rules of the game. And they will not only get it done, but they'll do it like you want them to do it. The task is connected to that policy or procedure, because if you just list it and you don't have a policy or procedure, it might have gotten done, but it got done the wrong way. So attaching the KRA on the PRD, can I get a vowel with that? Attaching the key result area to performance that is on the performance results description to a policy or procedure ensures that it's not only done, but it's done right. But it doesn't require you to write every policy or procedure before you can create that list. You can start with a simple checklist of key result areas and then add the policies and procedures over time, because that will take you some time to do. Let me give you three simple brain-dead steps to get started building systems right now. Step number one. Make a long list of everything that happens in your business, every task, every procedure. Think of everything that happens in your company on a day-to-day basis. Get a notebook and just keep adding to the list until you have the major key result areas identified. Step two, assign that KRA to a specific person that has that position. Discuss the PRD with the team member. And then step three is to begin developing your most important policies and procedures. Communicate them in writing and by training and follow-up with your team. So again, create a whole long list of tasks or procedures, everything that happens in your company, whole long list in marketing, sales, service, administration, training, everything that happens on a day-to-day basis. Step two is take those lists and take items from that list, group them together, and assign them to a person. Number three, Then start putting the most important policies and procedures in place. Start with the things that are hurting you the most, or where your team has fallen down the most, or where we're forgetting the most, or where the most money is on the line, or the most opportunity is on the line. I'll give you kind of a simple example here, a bookkeeper example. My job in the following areas will be satisfactorily completed when I have ... Number one, entered all service tickets according to the service ticket entering policies and procedures. Number two, entered all incoming invoices according to the accounts payable policies and procedures. Number three, invoiced and followed up with all unpaid accounts according to the accounts receivable procedures. Number four, made the bank deposit according to the bank deposit procedures and policies. Number five, sent out all referral reward certificates according to the referral reward certificate procedures. So you see, these are just five key result areas, and then underneath each one of them, for example, accounts receivables, it'll say when to send those invoices out, when to follow up, when to call, when to go legal. It'll have all of that. Who to tell, who not to tell. It'll have all of that on there.